speaker that we're having speaking is going to be speaking on growing one addict at a time. And without anything further, I give you Bob P. from Pittsburgh, PA.
I like how they warm you up, huh, with the readings.
My name is Bob. I'm an addict. And let's see, how do I start?
The longer I stay clean, I've been clean since July 12th of 75. And the longer I stay clean, the more I find out that this is not about me. The first time I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous was in a treatment center. The first person I heard speak was sitting right here. And it was an attraction that it, from that point until now, I've never looked back. I remember... Thank you. I remember sitting when I was dove sick, in despair, and they talk about being, you know, the degradation and the loneliness that we felt, just being sick and tired, I can honestly say that I didn't want to stop using. I didn't want to stop getting high when I first came to Narcotics Anonymous. I did not want to stop being high. I just wanted to change the way I was living, and I didn't know how to do that. So I knew this one guy who went to this treatment center. And he would come back occasionally. I was from Lancaster. And when he would come back to visit every so many months, he would do a bag of dope, drink a little bit of wine, Thunder Chicken. And, and I said, that's what I need to learn how to do. And he went to this treatment center, and I thought, that's where I need to go. Because I thought that's they taught you that there. And then once I went there, I found out he would come back and he would relapse. But in that treatment center, I can honestly say from the time I walked through the door, looking back on it only, not at the time, that my obsession was removed from day one. And I'm so grateful for that, God's grace. Because I see and I work with people like myself and guys I sponsor, and just, you know, I work with us, and I don't know what I'd do if I'd relapse. I really don't. My heart goes out to people that that have this gift that we have, and when they relapse, I just can't understand why would they want to just throw this away. You know, it was so freely given to us. Anyway, when I was 21, turned 22 in a treatment center, and there was a few people there that I went to the treatment center with that I used to get high with. And when I seen them come to the meeting, they had two meetings a week that would come in. And when they came to the treatment center, they encouraged you to get names and numbers, and if your situation at home was not well, to get someone's name and number and move in with them in Williamsport, PA. And, you know, everybody knows everybody, and they knew that I couldn't go back home, and I knew I didn't want to go back home because there was nothing there except hustle, cop, and get off. That was my life. And I couldn't work. So that's when I hooked up with somebody, and I asked him if I could stay on his sofa, and he said, sure. His name was Gil, and he was from Pittsburgh originally. So I lived with him for a week, and then got on welfare, and then I got my own room, and then I went to the treatment center and got two more guys. And there was three of us staying in a room. I just got a flashback. We were arguing and fighting all the time. And it wasn't about we didn't like each other. We just were getting clean. And they didn't like the way I was squeezing the toothpaste, I guess. I don't know. And but I can't tell you which meeting. We went to seven meetings a week, and we had to probably go. I was living in Williamsport after I went out, got out of the treatment center when I relocated. I relocated. I had a brown paper bag. That's all I had. When I got clean in a community, an NA community, that they didn't request if you wanted to go to a meeting. They didn't say, would you like to go to a meeting tonight? It just wasn't the way it was. We'll be there at 7 o'clock. Or they would just come by and knock on your door. It's meeting time. Let's go. There was nothing else for me to do. I mean, I was in a different town. I didn't have a job yet, and I was walking up one street and down the other looking for a job, you know. And occasionally I would think about the thoughts. I would think about, I wonder how my man Lenny's doing, or I wonder how this person is doing. Maybe I should call him. Maybe he needs this program. You know, some of the things that the guys I work now go through. And I would be afraid to bring it up at a meeting, because they were kind of like therapeutic type meetings that we went to. If you went into a bar to buy a pack of cigarettes, you were the topic of the meeting. That's just the way it was. And I was too afraid to go into a bar to get a pack of cigarettes. I would walk 3-4 blocks out. I didn't know where I was going. I know I wasn't going in Joe's bar. I know that. And I thank God for that today. I really do. I thank God for the accountability that was there. I mean, I'm not saying that's the way it should be, but for me, I'm glad it was like that for me. I needed someone to kick me in my ass, or just a fear of, you know, just I wanted to do the right thing. I didn't want to use. I didn't want to use. I didn't want to go back to the way of life I was living. I know part of that was using. The big meeting was probably, I don't know, 15 people. I can't remember, 20 maybe. It was a big meeting. Everybody knew everybody, and everybody knew if there was no cell phones. There was no cell phones, but everybody knew. If you had a phone, if you could afford a phone, everybody knew everybody's phone numbers. And then we got into a one-bedroom apartment, and a couple guys, and I just recall it was, you know, the seven meetings we went to, two or three of them we had to go from Williamsport to Allenwood, which was, I don't know, 13 miles maybe. And some of the crazy stuff I would do would be like, I was in a car hitchhiking because I didn't want to ask for anybody for help, so I'd say, I'm going to make sure I get to the meeting early. And I remember one day I was hitchhiking I forget what road it is now, but from Williamsport to Allenwood, Route 15, I think it was. Guy picks me up and he fires a joint up. I said, dude, you need to put that out. He said, you're in my car. I said, put it out or I'm jumping out of the car. He wouldn't stop. I was going to jump out, but he finally stopped. I mean, I just had such a fire. And I still have the same fire today in my heart. And I believe that that's a gift from God. It's just the faith I have. And the only way that fire is going out is if I pick up the gift that was so freely given to me. And it was just moves like that that I just continue to do. And someone said, we're starting a meeting at, where was it? I think it was Muncie. They were starting a meeting at Muncie Prison. Anybody, or no, it was the first one I went to was Lewisburg Federal Prison up in, yeah, Lewisburg. Anybody want to go? I just put my hand up. We're going to go start one at Rockview. My hand went up. And after I would do stuff like that, it would make me feel good, you know. I went to meetings. I had no clue what meeting it was, I'll be honest with you. We had three or four NA meetings a week, and I went to seven meetings a week, so you figure it out. I Then I got a job at the treatment center. I was a cook. And I guess the head chef one day didn't show up for work, and it was a night the board of directors were meeting, and they said, "You want to fill in?" I said, "Sure." And I had a little bit of a background in Lancaster as a chef. First job I had as a chef was in Lancaster County Prison. And you don't want to know, you know, all the stories you hear about the food are true. One guy would call me a whatever, and I'd say, "What did you call me?" I'd look underneath the thing. "What'd you call me?" "Oh, no, never mind. I didn't say that." Because I was behind. The cooks have more power than doctors, believe me. But I never hurt nobody. I don't remember hurting anybody deliberately. A friend of mine, Jimmy White, was a Muslim in jail. "I don't eat no swine." I said, "You drink the coffee this morning?" "Yeah, why?" I said, "I put pork in it." I was a jerk. I mean, I don't know why I did it. I just wanted to jag him off, I guess. But we were buddies. I mean, the kind of friend he was. It was him and the guy that went to White Deer that came back and was getting high, Chino, and me. It was white, black, and Puerto Rican. We could go in any neighborhood we wanted to and do what we needed to do. And Chino was just crazy. He was crazy. Violent. Oh, my God. We'd go in and take something that didn't belong to us, and he'd want to go in and beat people. I said, "Man, we got what we wanted. Let's get out." No, this bitch looked at me. She just looked at me some way, and I got to take care of this. I had so much fear in me all the time when I was with guys that were crazy all the time. I mean, they'd pull guns out and start firing guns, and that wasn't me. When I got clean, I said it was me. It was me. You know, I'd tell the stories like I was a tough guy, but I wasn't. I was no tough guy. But anyway, after I went, I hit the street, and when I went to White Deer Run, I got that job at White Deer, and I was a chef. I met a girl in the program. And if you worked at White Deer Run at the time, you weren't allowed to have a female in your car to give them a ride home if you worked at White Deer Run. If you did, you lost your job. That's just the way Dick Flanagan worked it. And I love Dick Flanagan. He saved my life. He's dead now. He had like 49 years. Oh, man, I'll never forget that guy. I remember sitting there, he'd say, "Next year at this time, half his room's going to be dead, drunk, or in prison." And right away, first thing came to my mind, ain't going to be me. I'm the half that's going to be clean because I'm listening to these people. There's six ways to stay clean, he told me, and I listened to him. And that motivation, that fire, like I said, was not me. It was not me, because I was a loser, man. I'm telling you, I was a first-class loser. I was no tough guy. I didn't do stick-ups. I'd wait until someone would do stick-ups, and then when they would nod out, I'd take their stuff. That's the kind of guy I was. Or if somebody robbed a drugstore, you know, I'd be there to pick up the crumbs, you know. That's the kind of guy I was. I was just a dirtbag, you know. But anyway, when I met this girl in a program, and we got hooked up, and she was from Pittsburgh, from Midland, PA. Her name was Nancy, and we got married, moved to Midland. So when we went there, there was no Narcotics Anonymous. So when I was at meetings, I would keep my eye open for people like us. There was like three or four of us. It was like four of us, and we started the first meeting May 10th of 78. The Double Bubble Group in Aliquippa. And that was a journey that it's hard to describe what we went through. Every day I would wake up thinking things of how could we make our NA meetings better. I mean, I was obsessed. Dennis Haggerty was obsessed, and me, Dennis, and there was just a handful of us. One guy just died a couple of weeks ago, Rick Hill. He just died. I can't put into words the and I still have it today. When I'm at my home group, you know, I feel certain. I mean, not my just my home. When I'm in Narcotics Anonymous, I just like when they read about this might be the only person's snapshot of Narcotics Anonymous and how we carry ourselves. I get so defensive sometimes when I see the circus that we're in sometimes. And I know I can't change that circus. I can only do what I can do for me. And I can only hold the guys that I love and care for accountable, and they can hold me accountable. I just feel a certain way when some things go down and I can't change, but I just have to accept it. That's just the way it is. Because there's too many guys working their butts off to create a recovery atmosphere here. And I just have to accept it's just life sometimes, you know. If you don't like it, go start your own meeting. And that's what I did. That's what I do. So, we went to any length to get people in our meetings. We went to different treatment centers and counseling programs, and wherever we could find somebody, we'd just load our cars up. And then the cool thing it was about it, the first meeting that started was in a treatment at that treatment center. There was a treatment center in Aliquippa. I call it the Aliquippa Hilton. The cool thing about that was that people came from different states, Erie, Ohio. One of the guys is here tonight, this afternoon. And they were attracted to us. It was their first shot, their first snapshot of Narcotics Anonymous, and they were attracted to it. And they would come back, oh, we show us how do we get this started? We don't have none of this in my hometown. Youngstown, Erie, you know, Braddock, you know, Shadyside. I mean, I got a meeting list in my car. I got a box of stuff. I thought I had some shit. He said, my man over here got some stuff, man. Woo. I gave it all away. I might give this away, too. No, don't get excited now. But the only thing I can say is that there isn't anything we didn't do. We didn't deliberately try to break a tradition. Like, we didn't try to hurt nobody. We would do with anything we try to do to get people in to get help. I remember we had our first anniversary. It was the first, I can't remember which one it was now. We got a girl named Shelley Marshall who wrote the book Young, Sober, and Free. Because we didn't have the only thing we had was IPs at the time. So we got her from Spokane, Washington. And she flew her in. She came and she spoke at this, it wasn't the first anniversary. It might have been the third. It was in, I think we had it in the fire hall, I think. Anyway, we went all over the place. We were telling guys in AA, counseling, treatment centers. So this girl got up there and told her fifth step. She gave her fifth step when she gave her story. And she was a very active woman. And she talked about the orgy she was in and waking up out of a blackout. And these old AA guys said, I'm not going to AA no more. I like this NA. You guys tell it like it is. I said, yeah, okay. And them guys were so sweet. They were so loving. They never, ever, ever once, when I first moved to Beaver Valley, not one of them guys ever told me I was never welcome to their church basement. Never. Never. I don't disrespect them either. I just won't do it, and I won't let no one do that around me. Because I love them. They've saved my life, and they saved our lives. No matter, I don't know how you cut it down, how you break it down. I'm just telling you how I broke it down. I took it the whole way back. I read the literature. I read all the history. We're talking about where it started, how it's... I don't have to get into all that. Just do your homework. I love them people. I choose to go to Narcotics Anonymous myself. I don't need to go there no more. This is where I need to be, right here. For me. If somebody I sponsor wants to go to the YMCA, God bless you, man. You know, I talked to my brother today. He was all, oh, don't tell me I want to go to them damn meetings. He's sober for 23 years. I said, when's the last time you went to a meeting here, big boy? I like jagging him. Big tough guy. I said, hey, Butch, when's the last time you went to a meeting? Oh, I was like pushing a button. You know. So, hey, whatever blows your hair back, brother. The only thing I can say is that we're starting another meeting, probably on Monday night. It's going to be on McLaughlin Run Road in Upper St. Clair, hopefully, if they let us have it. Here's what was cool. When I called the lady from the township, this is how we do this. And I started to explain to her, we started a meeting on Thursday night in one room 6 years ago. And there's a lot of people getting well in the South Hills, in Upper St. Clair, the suburbs. And I started to explain to her who I was and what we're about. And in the other room is Narnon. And there is families getting well there. She said, boss, stop. I know who you are, and I know what you're doing. That's all I had to say. It's working. She said, you don't have to explain nothing. I'll get back to you as soon as I can. 5 minutes, she called me back. She says, you're on the thing for them to talk about it in the township next board meeting. So my job is to pray now. God, if you want us to have a meeting there, I mean, we'd like to have one there for the young boys. I'm going to teach these young boys how to start a meeting and make it their meeting. When I go to meetings for myself, I'm only speaking for myself. I don't know what you all need to do. I know at one time I used to think I knew what everybody should be doing. But the longer I'm clean, the more I know it's not about me. I've been clean 36 years, and I think that the last 20, the most important thing that it was for me was taken from me. And if it wasn't for God and Narcotics Anonymous, I wouldn't be breathing right now. I'm not talking about being high. The rope was talking to me. I'm telling you, I didn't want to live. And the love that the men showed me since, I guess, April, it was like April of 2010 till now, is second to none. There was nobody called me and said, hey, Bob, would you like to go to a meeting? They banged on the door. Open the door, I'm coming in. Dude walked right in. He didn't give me a he just came in my home. Didn't even invite himself. He just come right in. Said, I love you. Tell me what's going on. I had a guy who had 15 days call me every day. I had their parents call. I had guys that weren't even in this program call me. And they just said, I love you. You just got to get to the other side. I knew then, in April of 10, I could get to the other side. I just didn't want to go through the pain to get there. And I can honestly say today, I heard people talk like this before, but I can tell you right now that when I'm in pain, I thank God. I mean, I'm grateful for the pain that I'm feeling. Now I have joy in my heart. The tears I want to shed right now, they're joy, it's not pain. Because of the love these men showed me, they embraced me, they walked me through one moment at a time with this pain that I'm in. I've never had this much pain. And there was no drug that would. I wasn't even thinking drugs. I was thinking, thank God I didn't have a gun. I mean, I had this nylon rope. It was just, it was talking to me, Bob. I'll make your life better for you. I'll take the pain right from you. And then the only thing I could think of, someday my son might thank you for showing me how to walk through a storm clean. Because he's walking right beside me, right through the storm, 24/7, my boy's with me. He's watching the 12 steps work in my life. He don't know it, but the 12 steps are working in his life. I have Christ in the center of my heart. I have God in the center of my heart. We pray twice a day together. I mean, he listens. He don't pray. I'm just so grateful that God gives me the strength to do. I ask for his will each day. I pray, I say, God, please give me the strength to do your will, not my will. Please put somebody in front of me today that is less fortunate than me. And so that I can tell him how wonderful you've been to me, my son, and how freely this gift of recovery was given to me. And if there's somebody else that needs something, please put them in front of me. There isn't a day that goes by that that opportunity doesn't come to me. And it's not always an addict that needs help or someone needs a ride someplace. It might be somebody that's coming looking for an apartment that needs just someone to listen to, or somebody that needs a door held for them, you know. For me, it's big. Because, you know, they have that things on, I'm real computer illiterate, and they have those spell checks and all that other computer stuff. I wish they could put something in me like, you know, a tone of voice. Because there's times I can be so mean to people and so cold to people. As soon as I do it, I just feel so bad about myself. Just because of 12 steps. Just because after I do something, or I say something, you know, or road rage or flip a bird to somebody. It's been a while since I did that, but it's like, why'd you do that? Why'd you do that? The longer I stay clean, the more I find out it's not about me anymore. It really isn't. My purpose in life is to serve God. It took a long time for me to... I knew I was... working for him for all these years, and it's addicts. My job, I found out what, and you're supposed to find out what you're put here for. I believe that I was put here for what I'm here for right now, is to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. And I can only do what I can do. And everybody has their little thing in the program that they're good at, and some people are good at setting up, and some people are good at tearing down, and some people are good at running their mouth. I know I miss Dot Tally, man. She could sing, man. Whoa. I miss listening to her. She was a good friend. A lot of people there's a lot of people that aren't here anymore that help make the fabric of Narcotics Anonymous in our region. When I say region, I'm talking Ohio, Erie, I'm talking about the whole tri-state area. We could sit here and tell stories. There's some old-timers here. Remember so-and-so, and remember D, and remember Billy Newmont. I mean, there's just so many people that help put this all together. It's like a big blanket you weave together, you know. And I'm just grateful that was just one little thread of that blanket, you know. For me, I still enjoy looking in a room. I just sit there and I'll scan the room and just see who needs. I'm not blowing my horn now. I'm just trying to tell you how I think and feel, you know, and how I work. You know, I just like to scoop somebody up, put them in the car, and say, "Let's go get a coffee." Or, "Where are you going tomorrow? You want to go to a baseball game, or you want to go to a meeting, or something?" You know, I just enjoy, you know, making people happy. That's just. One of my son's best friends is a picture of him here. His father went to prison, federal prison, for 7 years, and we had a surprise party for him last October 8th. And the kid's a good kid, and he gave me this thank you card. Every time I read it, I start crying. He just thanked me for being there for him. And the first thought that comes to my mind is, I thank God for keeping me clean. Thank God for working the steps. I don't take any credit for any of this stuff. This has absolutely nothing to do with me. Absolutely nothing. In the morning I wake up, I surrender each morning. And when I started doing that, my life, it's going on 2 years now, and I surrender and submit to God every morning and just say, "Here, take my will." I still do my own, you know, I still do my own will some, you know, during the day, but my life is going so. The way I feel about myself now, and the way I think and act now, is so much better than it's ever been. I'm starting to feel joy, and I think the joy is a byproduct of the way I'm living. And I don't think I could have what I have today and feel and think what I feel now without going through the storm that I just went through. And so I'm still in it a little bit, but pretty much on the other side. I got both feet out of the water, and I'm just like drying off, you know. It's. I just can't explain it. I wouldn't turn back. I thank God for the pain. when I watch my son, and I watch people go through. I've never really, if I look back on it, I've never learned anything in the good times, really. I've learned more from tragedy and through storms. And this, you know, I told my son all the time, the coach took his helmet off today and started chewing on his ear about a certain way he was playing football today. And I've taught him how that's going to make him a better football player and a better man, is to just keep going straight through it, you know. And it's a sign of a strong man is to ask for help. And when you say, "I need help." I had a friend of mine from Pittsburgh, Alan. Better watch what I'm saying. I have no idea. I don't have an inner clock in me. As far as, huh?
20 after 5.
What time am I supposed to stop? Okay. I had a friend of mine. his name was Alan from Pittsburgh, Alan Churkin. He got clean a long time ago, moved to Lancaster, and went to a halfway house there. I tell you this story only because it's so sad. It's just sometimes I don't understand, and at the same time I don't understand, I just know that through that storm he's going to be a stronger man. Long story short, became very successful in business and was going to meetings, met a girl, she overdosed and died. He had two or three kids. One of them started smoking weed, and that started our conversation of hours and hours and hours over the last, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years. And he called me the other day and said, "Bob, I have to call you. I have to tell you something." And as soon as he said that, I knew exactly what he was going to say. I knew. I've been through this so many times. He said, in June, which was 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago, he said his son died, overdosed. And he was so obsessed with getting his son. He had 3.5 years clean in Florida. He was such, blah, 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 a good kid, and he relapsed, and just the things that we go through. I tell you what we have here is just so beautiful. We can lean on each other, and I'm kind of like running out, so I really don't want to talk too much. But the only thing I want to say is that the love that I have now today with the men that are in my life, that I have like four guys. We have an accountability group. We meet once a month. And in my storm, these guys, something went down, and they all sent an email, text, and called at the same time. I don't know how they did that, but they said, "We're meeting. We're going to meet at the Galleria in 15 minutes. Be there." And all five guys, we just met. And stuff like that, you can't replace it. They put their arms around me, prayed for me, loved me, left there, and three or four of the guys in the program came over to me. Why would I want to give this up? And if I could give everything I've learned and have, all of it, to a newcomer, just give me today. Just today. I'd do it right now. I really would. They just can't understand. Sometimes we try to talk to these guys. I'm just lost for words, so I just want to thank Dan. I just want to thank Dan for asking me to speak. And, the thing I just want to say is that, it's our job to create a recovery atmosphere. And most of the meetings I've looked at in our meeting list, it says it's open. It's an open meeting. And I believe it's my responsibility to try to create an atmosphere of recovery as much as possible. I went to a meeting a friend of mine was speaking at, and I don't want to say where it was at because it doesn't matter, but I went there, and they had, the meeting was, before they introduced him to speak, it was a 10 o'clock meeting, and at 10:50, they introduced him to speak. There's something wrong with that picture. There is definitely something wrong with that. It's a recovery atmosphere. It's our job. I'm not trying to preach to nobody, trust me. It's our responsibility. It might be someone's only snapshot. And I'm not saying my home group's better, because it's not. It's just another meeting to me. We have two readings. Within 4.5 minutes, a meeting starts, and people are sharing their pain or joy. And I just think that that's what it's, for me, that's what it's about, is coming here, sharing our experience, strength, hope, whether it's someone whining about whatever or someone sharing their joy. Some things go down, I know I have to accept. I go to certain meetings, I just say, why did I even come here? And it's What are you going to do? That's the way it is. Well, there's something you can do about it. There's something we can do. Have a group conscience. Let's sit down. Let's get down. What are we doing here? What's our purpose here? What's our purpose here? There's a couple meetings I wanted to go to a meeting on Monday night, and I look, it's no, I'm staying home, Monday night football. I'm telling you the truth. That's why I wanted to help start a meeting on Monday night, so I can get to a meeting and still get the second half of Monday football. I don't want to get on the podium and bang on this podium, and I just don't want to do that anymore. I'm not going to do it. I'm just sharing my experience. It's our job. It's open to the public. It's an open meeting to invite people in to attract rather than promote NA. We got to stop this clown show that we have sometimes. Just my opinion. This ain't NA's opinion. This is my opinion. I've been doing this 36 years. It's nonsense. It really is. I'll stay home. I ain't going to that meeting. I don't need it. That's right. I don't need it. I'll go to a different meeting. I do need meetings, but I don't need that one. And I talked to 15, 20 people. They all say the same thing. So why ain't we changing it? Don't say we can, because we can. We're strong in numbers. Let's stop this nonsense, man. Save someone. It says one addict helping another. Don't need all them clown shows, man. We don't. We just don't need it. This might save, and what I have to do is pay attention. Like, for instance, a guy said to me, this is a while back now, I was with one of my brothers. I seen a girl walk by. I said, boy, she has a nice ass. You know what he said to me? That's somebody's mother, man. That's someone's daughter. Why don't you keep your mouth clean? You say you're clean? Why don't you start from the inside? Oh, that's love for me. That's what I'm about today. Guy called me the other day, so you're trying to be Mother Teresa. I said, I wish I had 1% of what she had. That's right. I want to be clean. I want to, not just from drugs. I want to be clean. I want to think clean. I want to act clean. In my mouth, I want my mouth. It's hard there, my mouth. I just, so hard. When someone does something I don't think they should be doing, or when I think they should be doing it, their sarcasm, I just say, God, please make me a new man. Make me a better person today. Because of Narcotics Anonymous. Thanks. Thanks for listening, people.